KM Enterprises versus Global Traffic. Ms. Yocum.
May it please the Court. My name is Jana Yocum. I represent KM Enterprises, Inc., and this is an appeal from a final judgment of dismissal based on lack of jurisdiction and improper venue out of the Southern District of Illinois. It's an antitrust case alleging competitive bidding improprieties involving the traffic preemption equipment market. The issues involved are the construction and application of the special venue provisions of the Clayton Act, Section 12, and KM Enterprises seeks reversal of the dismissal. Today I'm going to concentrate on statutory construction of Section 12.
But you would agree, let me just say, I mean, the circuits have had two views about the way Section 12 should be understood, and I'll describe one of them as the package deal approach. That's the view that the Second Circuit has taken, that the D.C. Circuit has taken, under which if you want, in a sense, the benefit of not just nationwide but worldwide service of process, you need to comply with the venue provisions of the statute, that the two aspects of the statute, venue and personal jurisdiction through service of process, need to go together. The other view is the menu approach, under which you can maybe lay venue using the first half of the statute, but use a state service of process, or maybe you have nationwide service of process, and you can use some other venue statute. And that more or less is what the GoVideo case has said in the Ninth Circuit. And so there's already a disagreement among, and there may be other views as well, but I would like to hear from you why you think that what I'm calling the package approach isn't correct.
First of all, based upon the language of the statute, if you look at the grammar, the package approach starts at the beginning of the provision and goes to the end of the provision, and they apply the first section, the first portion of it first, and then which is the venue portion, and then they apply the second portion, which is the service of process.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. It's this little phrase, all process in such cases, which is the part that appears right after the semicolon. And so such cases, what are they? Any suit, action, or proceeding under the antitrust laws against a corporation, blah, blah, blah. So you've got the three places for venue, district where you're an inhabitant, where you may be found, where you transact business. And then you have the service of process part. Now, of course, as you know, under the general venue statute, if it happens to be a foreign corporation, then you can be laid in any district. So that would lead you, if you have the pick-and-choose approach, the menu approach, of saying, A, you can serve process all over the world, and B, you can put venue in any district in the United States. That's a very broad proposition. Doesn't seem at all consistent with Congress bothering to write a narrower statute.
I didn't see Congress wanting to write a narrower statute, and that's one of the things I wanted to address today with regard to legislative history.
Don't you recall that the Supreme Court in recent years has been careful to say that before we assume that the U.S. laws in any field, securities laws, if you think of the National Bank of Australia against Morrison case or the antitrust laws or other laws, govern the entire world, we want a pretty good signal from Congress. And here we want, in the venue provisions, a link to the district. We want to see that the corporation that's being sued is doing something in that district.
I have provided that in my brief and in my argument to actually meet that standard if that's required by this court, so that I'm showing that it does, that KM Enterprise, that GTT transacts business in Southern Illinois, and I think we have sufficient facts for that. But then also there...
So that would mean... So one of your arguments is you think even under the Second Circuit's approach that your client can show that the two defendants here... Now, the district judge doesn't agree with you. He finds that the activities of GTT in the Southern District of Illinois are de minimis.
Right, and he didn't apply Section 12. He applied 1391.
Well, but he finds it's de minimis. So right. That would cover as well transact business in Section 12, wouldn't you think?
Not necessarily. I don't think they're the same standard.
You don't think there's a requirement of substantial business under Section 12?
There's a substantial business requirement, yes, but it
doesn't
necessarily...
Here we've got about $500 in sales a year, right?
Well, that depends on how you look at it, because there's also evidence in the record of 11 intersections being installed during that time in one of the cities at a cost of $10,000 to $15,000 per intersection, and 7 intersections being installed in the Metro East at a cost of $10,000 to $15,000 per intersection. And that, and of course, those were the, their argument is that those aren't being sold directly from GTT to Southern Illinois. But in the everyday transaction of business in this type of industry, it should count. But
those are through independent distributors. Those are through independent distributors, is that right?
There's a distributor in Chicago and it goes through the competitive bidding process through the Illinois Department of Transportation. Mm-hmm. So if a municipality in Southern Illinois wants the GTT product, they can't call GTT and ask for it. They have to go through the competitive bidding channel.
Can I ask you, Ms. Yoakum, if I understand your theory here, what you want to do is combine the corporation resident provision in the general venue statute, 1391C2, with Clayton Act Section 12's nationwide service of process, or worldwide service of process, in a way that I think would mean, under your theory, any antitrust case could be filed in any district in the United States against a domestic or foreign defendant, and venue and personal jurisdiction would be available in any district. Is that right?
That's one of my alternative theories, yes.
Has any court adopted that theory?
Yes, it has.
Which one?
I believe it was the Ninth Circuit.
Well, Go Video.
I've seen it more than
Go Video.
I didn't make it up.
Counsel, Go Video adopted that with respect to a foreign defendant, and we know that foreign defendants, when you're getting jurisdiction based on ties to the United States as a whole, are pretty wide open in terms of venue within the country. Has any court reached the conclusion that you're advocating? That would say, for example, that the company that's operating in Maine can be sued in Southern California under your theory.
I don't remember whether it was a law review article or a court or a law review article that cited a court, and I would have to go back and check and provide that information to the court.
The problem is, and I actually want to come back to a different point, that although nationwide service of process does exist under some federal statutes, and Rule 4 recognizes that and the like, the normal situation is that there will be a venue restriction that goes along with that. And it would be quite unusual. I mean, I know academics who've argued that we should just stop worrying about initial venue altogether and use vehicles like 1404A to transfer cases to the most convenient district. But to my knowledge, the Supreme Court has never gone that far. And in fact, we're looking for venue in a place where the corporation could be sued if that district were a state. And so then you incorporate all the notions of minimum contacts with the state that we're familiar with under the various state long-arm statutes. To combine nationwide service of process and nationwide venue is something that I have not seen, other than perhaps with the case of the foreign corporations, where the venue statute itself says that there's nationwide venue.
It's one of my alternative arguments, and I think it's, I think it's a viable argument, but
These are not foreign corporations. They're Minnesota, right? Or Delaware, and so I don't know why that theory helps you, that there's both nationwide venue and nationwide process. I just don't see that in the Clayton Act, at least, and I don't see it in 1391 either.
Under the broad view, the venue is allowed not only under Section 12, but also under Section 1391. And that's what I'm arguing for, but specifically, and then I go take it one step further.
But the other way of looking at that, if Section 12, as I believe it is, in fact, is supplementary to 1391, the question is, how do you serve process if you're relying on 1391 venue? Because if you're relying on 1391 venue, maybe you don't get the nationwide service of process that Section 12 gives you. Maybe you have to go back to the other methods of serving process that are recognized in Rule 4, including borrowing the long-arm statute of the state. Congress has never passed a generic nationwide service of process statute for every case that raises a federal question.
And that's exactly
that doesn't exist.
That's exactly what I have said in when I've specified the integrated view. That's their view. They if you don't qualify for venue under Section 12, you don't qualify for nationwide service of process,
right.
and you have to get long arm jurisdiction.
Right. And that seems to be, in a sense, the way the district court did it. And by the way, just to circle back for one second, I think the reason the district court judge was thinking about stream of commerce cases is precisely your concept that there were these Chicago independent distributors who were then selling these devices for use, among other places, in the Southern District of Illinois. And the judge was trying to think, well, is there some way I can hook that up to GTT? And the only way that seems available would be stream of commerce. But you seem to have conceded that doesn't work.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily a concession, because I'm not I didn't raise stream of commerce. I don't think stream of commerce applies, and I don't think if I raised it you would grant my request. But I wouldn't argue that here.
This appeal presents a number of fascinating issues for those of us who live and die by federal procedure. But why are we having this big fight, given that there's already litigation pending in Minnesota between these parties?
Well, the litigation pending in Minnesota started in October of 2010,
mm-hmm.
September of 2010. The trial date is approaching. In fact, the trial date was, when this was being filed, was set for February 17th, and now it's been pushed back to June. But these issues, they have framed, I have one paragraph in my complaint that deals with the patent litigation, but they have framed my case as a patent misuse case, and it's not. This case is about competitive bidding improprieties throughout the country. It's about competing in the market.
But if it's about things that happen throughout the country and there's this Minnesota case going on, it seems if you had filed in the District of Minnesota, you would have identified it at least as a related case. That court might have had some ability to decide whether there was a benefit to consolidation or not. I mean, courts don't have to consolidate. But you certainly could have saved yourself a lot of time and trouble on personal jurisdiction and venue if you'd gone to Minnesota.
Yes,
I mean, here we are.
But
Chicago,
I think
this
is a different case. We started addressing the issues in this case on October 4th of 2011, and
I understand
didn't
it's
identify
a
the
different
an,
case.
As an antitrust. We were trying to figure out, well, how do you do a protest and how what is and we couldn't do a protest and. That we were starting there and building our way up, and it became bigger and bigger, and it's even bigger now than it was when I filed this. So, it's a different case, and we looked at it as an independent case, and we looked at the venue statute, and I think it's important that it be brought in Southern Illinois because the business is in Southern Illinois, and they are transacting business there, and I just think this is an important issue, and I wouldn't have worked so hard if I didn't think so.
Okay.
I'm going to reserve some time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yocum. Ms. Chow?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I am Emily Chow. I am here with Rick Duncan. We represent the defendants, appellees GTT Inc. and GTT LLC. The district court's dismissal for improper venue should be affirmed because no matter which venue statute is applied in this case, whether it's the general venue statute under 28 U.S.C. 1391 or the special venue provision under Section 12 of the Clayton Act, there is insufficient evidence in the record to support venue in the Southern District of Illinois. So the court seems interested in the national context theory, but it does not matter whether this court adopts the Ninth Circuit approach in Go Video or the D.C. and Second Circuit's approach in Daniel and GTE New Media Services, because either way, KME must prove that venue was proper in the Southern District of Illinois under either statute, which it has failed to do. And so as Judge Wood noted, the circuit split involves whether the special venue provision in Section 12 is the only source of venue for a federal antitrust suit or whether the general venue provisions of 1391 are also available.
Well, I didn't say that, actually. What I said is if you're going to use the venue part of Section 12, is that, in a sense, the price of using the personal jurisdiction part of Section 12? Are they linked together? I think I also indicated that if you don't care to use the venue part of Section 12, if you're willing to go under 1391, then you certainly can use the long-arm statute of the state where you're bringing the case to seek to achieve service of process. The question on the table is, if you're going to use 1391, can you also turn around and use the venue half of Section 12, the nationwide service of process? So it's a somewhat different point. I wouldn't say that Section 12 ousts 1391 altogether.
But in this case, I guess the national context theory doesn't support reversal of this dismissal because either way, there is improper venue in the Southern District of Illinois.
Then would you agree that the district court erred in saying there's no personal jurisdiction, given the nationwide service of process, nationwide jurisdiction under the Clayton Act?
As we read the dismissal order, we believe that the district court found that there was a lack of personal jurisdiction as an alternative ground for dismissal. And so I think because there was an evidentiary hearing held prior to oral argument, the standard for proof on the question of personal jurisdiction was a preponderance of the evidence, and the only evidence on record at that time was GTT LLC's sales into the Southern District of Illinois.
But he was looking at personal jurisdiction in the sense of the state statutes of Illinois. Surely there is easily personal jurisdiction if it's a national context test. I mean, they're in Minnesota, right? You know, so there's... So that's done. So if you've got national service of process, then it really boils down exclusively to a venue case, right?
Right.
Okay.
So I guess here then our position would be that because venue was improper under either statute, whether you're looking at 1391B or if you are looking at Section 12 of the Clayton Act, under either rubric, there was no venue as to either defendant in the Southern District of Illinois.
But it makes a little bit of a difference. If venue is bad, I don't think anybody was arguing 1406, although the district court at the end does say, I'm not going to transfer this case to Minnesota because I forget exactly what his reason, but he says he's not going to transfer the case to Minnesota.
Right. We had, when we moved to dismiss, we moved in the alternative to transfer the case to Minnesota under 1404.
It's actually a 1406 transfer. If venue is flawed, then 1406 allows the court the choice of transferring or dismissing.
Right.
So whether you know it or not, that's what you were actually moving under.
Okay. Thank you for that correction. So if the court doesn't have any further questions on national context, I can focus on the improper venue findings of the district court. So the standard of review of the district court's dismissal for improper venue is abuse of discretion. And a clearly erroneous standard for appellate review applies to the district court's findings from the evidentiary hearing. And on this record, the district court did not abuse its discretion. The findings are not clearly erroneous, and the dismissal should be affirmed on the grounds of improper venue. After the GTT defendants introduced evidence of GTT LLC sales into the Southern District of Illinois in connection with their motion to dismiss, KME conducted discovery through serving interrogatories and document requests on the GTT defendants and taking third-party depositions. The district court even held an evidentiary hearing and permitted KME to examine three live witnesses prior to oral argument. That record, however, will not support venue under either statute. As the district court found, neither GTT defendant maintains an office in Illinois. GTT Inc. had no sales into the Southern District of Illinois or any other judicial district for that matter. GTT LLC only transacts a de minimis amount of business there. During the four-year period from 2008 through 2011, GTT LLC's sales into the Southern District of Illinois consisted of just 6 invoices to 4 customers and totaled just $2,327.25, which was a mere 0.002% of GTT LLC's total sales over that time.
Ms. Chow, let me just ask you, what's wrong with the following argument for venue in the Southern District of Illinois? Section 12 of the Clayton Act makes these defendants subject to personal jurisdiction for antitrust cases anywhere in the United States. That's premise one. Second premise is, under 1391C2, a corporation is deemed a resident anywhere it's subject to personal jurisdiction on the case in question. That would seem to be anywhere in the United States on an antitrust claim. That's the second premise. And the conclusion, then, is that venue in any district in the United States, including the Southern District of Illinois, is permissible. And if you've got a problem with that, then the thing to do is to ask the judge to transfer under 1404. What's wrong with that argument?
I think the section of 1391 that applies to this case would be 1391D, which discusses residency of a corporation in states with multiple districts. So even if the GTT defendants were deemed to be subject to personal jurisdiction under 1391, you would need to then look at their contacts with the Southern District of Illinois, because Illinois has multiple judicial districts.
You're assuming, actually, that although 1391C, which in C2 particularly addresses corporate venue, when it says is subject to the court's personal jurisdiction, it was Congress was actually thinking, although didn't say so, of the personal jurisdiction that would apply to the state courts in that place. Because otherwise, the argument that Judge Hamilton makes seems fine. I mean, D would be available. There are many, many places where there's no federal statute providing for nationwide service of process. D would have plenty of room to operate. We wouldn't be reading it out of the statute. But your argument seems to infer that there's this qualification somehow in C2 that isn't on the face of things.
And your answer, if I understand it correctly, means that your clients could be sued in Maine, Connecticut, Massachusetts. There are many, many states in the country that just have one district.
Right. So personal jurisdiction under 13D would be a prerequisite. So we would argue that we weren't subject to personal jurisdiction in Maine. Well, I guess I don't know what the facts are.
Yeah, but Judge Hamilton's making the point that it's kind of a strange position to take, that there's this powerful protection for corporations in states that happen to have multiple districts, where you have to go to the state long arm and check, you know, contacts with that district. But if you happen to go next door, you know, to a state that has only one district, then the sky's the limit. Then you can just sue under C2. I mean, unless C2 has the implicit qualification that I'm postulating.
Right.
So it may add up to the fact that the Clayton Act Section 12 isn't quite as clear as some people think it may be. But there are difficulties with an interpretation that doesn't link the two parts of Section 12 together.
Ms. Chow, could I ask you to address a question that your brief raised and plaintiff answered in reply? You're asking us, if we disagree on the venue question, to go ahead and reach the merits of arguments you raised that would justify dismissal with prejudice. How do we have jurisdiction to do that in the absence of a cross appeal?
Yes, so an appellee can, without taking a cross appeal, urge in support of a court order any matter appearing in the record. But we do concede that to the extent that dismissal on alternative grounds would be with prejudice, that the court remand the case to the district court for entry of an appropriate judgment.
Could I also ask you one other question about
But that's already relief that goes beyond the judgment, and I think Judge Hamilton's question stands. Without a cross appeal, we cannot expand your rights under the judgment, and you would agree that going from without prejudice to with prejudice is an expansion.
Right. So, yes, we would say that if dismissal on our alternative grounds would be with prejudice, we would ask for remand for further consideration.
That those would simply be issues for the district court to address in the first instance if we disagree with you on the venue question.
Now,
let me just follow up, if I could, on one other question that's presented on the appeal, this issue about sealed documents. I understand that the district court did seal some of the commercial documents in question here. To the extent that we're talking about, in essence, invoices and prices on sales to public entities like cities several years ago, I have trouble seeing how there's any protectable interest in confidentiality.
Well, those documents are not public documents. The documents that we filed under seal originally, where all this kind of started, were invoices, and not all of those invoices were to public entities.
Would you agree that invoices to public entities are not confidential?
Perhaps the information contained therein, but we believe that our invoices with our...
If they're received by the city of Effingham or whatever, doesn't the Illinois public records law make those kinds of financial records for what a government is spending on its money on public documents available on request?
Perhaps, but I think that KME could perhaps obtain those documents through a different venue, but we believe that our business information is confidential and should be kept that way.
Even if it's being printed on the front page of the Effingham Post or whatever the paper is down there?
I suppose
it's a strange position to take. I mean, if you're right, and some of these invoices go to private entities that are not subject to open records laws and the like, that strikes me as a different issue. But to the extent they're going to entities that are under a legal obligation to be transparent, you don't have a protectable interest in that. You've chosen to do business with them.
Well, I will represent to your honors that there were invoices that we produced that were to private entities. And then we also, in connection with our client's declaration, kind of aggregated all of that information. And so we had redacted that portion for the public file. So if your honors have no further questions, I will briefly conclude, if I may. With GTT LLC's de minimis sales into the district of $2,327.25 over 4 years, GTT Inc.'s utter lack of contacts with the district, and no offices, employees, or equipment installations by either defendant in the district court acted within its discretion to find that venue was improper in the Southern District of Illinois under either Section 1391 or Section 12 of the Clayton Act. And the dismissal should be affirmed for improper venue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Chow. Ms. Yocum.
I'd like to spend a brief talking about how these facts implicate the merits. And there's one invoice that was attached to the motion, their motion to dismiss, and that invoice had a phase selector. And that phase selector is an optical phase selector, and it's an obsolete optical phase selector. The new kind is the GPS phase selector. And there, in addition to the one invoice that GTT specifically sold into the district, then we have 18 new intersections that were sold into the district through the competitive bidding process, and they're debating that. But the one invoice that is not in question, in dispute, involved the obsolete infrared kind. And throughout the country, the GTT has been encouraging municipalities to specify this Opticom infrared phase selector as one of their specifications, and KME has not been able to would you like me to finish this argument? And KME has not been able to bid on these projects. And then after GTT wins the bid, they say, oh, we don't sell that infrared phase selector anymore. We're going to give you the dual unit at no additional charge. And the dual unit has both the optical phase selector and the GPS phase selector in the same housing. And that aces KME out of the market. And the fact that this is untrue is proven in Southern Illinois, because they're selling these obsolete phase selectors and telling the people everywhere else that they aren't being sold. And the reason that affects our merits is, for one thing, it goes to the Norr Pennington defense, if that defense is viable, and it also goes to the tying issue. So I wanted to tie that up. And thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.